Election Day, Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. On the program, we welcomed a spokesman from Sacred Heart University responding to reports that some Sacred Heart University students were having a tough time voting in the north end of Bridgeport. Also on the program, a return visit from one of our legal eagles, constitutional law professor Bill Dunlap from the Quinnipiac University Law School, giving us his latest perceptions and opinions on what's going on in the impeachment inquiry. And joining us right now on Connecticut Today, we thank him for coming on, Connor Hartgraves. Connor is the assistant to the president at Sacred Heart University. Connor, Paul Pacelli here. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, Connor, can you just fill us in a little bit? I read the story you're quoted in the Connecticut Post about some of the Sacred Heart students having a little bit of a, they say they were hassled a little in the north end. What can you tell us about this?
Well, I'm standing outside of John Winthrop. We're hearing students as they're coming out. This was earlier in the morning. We're hearing students coming out saying that there were some comments made by people who I presume were the poll workers, things along the lines of, more Sacred Heart students, these dumb college students, they don't know, where they live. They shouldn't be allowed to vote here. Things of that nature. At the same time, which goes more towards that voter suppression, is we have copies of students' voter registrations, but they're not on the rolls, and the registrar can't explain why. That's more concerning to me at the moment.
Okay, so you're saying the offhanded comments are one thing, but that's not a real substantive thing. You're concerned about what you term, and these are your words, right, Connor? You said voter suppression. You're concerned about a lack of uniformity for what's available there to verify a student's eligibility, correct?
Well, I mean, call it what you will, but there's really no explanation for it. The students registered fair and square, but they don't show up on the rolls, and there's no explanation as to why that happens.
But to me,
that feels like voter suppression.
Are students, Connor, are they told, does the university make any sort of an effort to tell them, listen, you may have registered, but just in case, bring X and X with you? Is that standard practice or not?
Well, there's a group of students on campus. They formed a little group called Pioneer Vote that has been spearheading the effort to encourage students to register and to vote and become politically active. And they've been sending out communications on all mediums possible saying, these are the issues that are being discussed. This is how you register to vote. This is what you need to bring once you do register to vote. The students, to be fair, although they're registered in Bridgeport, a lot of their licenses will say Massachusetts or New York, because that's where they're from. Mm-hmm. And that's not a problem. The students can sign affidavits claiming, saying who they are and where they live. But even in some cases, their IDs are being told they're no good, and they have to go back and get additional verification, such as a piece of mail or something.
And again, your concerns raised with the registrar's office, and they've had no substantive response to this?
Well, Sandy, I'm blanking on her last name. She's a Democratic
Ayala, Redford. Sandy Redford. Ayala, yep.
Yes. She did stop by John Winthrop, and I explained to her the issues, and she did say she's going to take care of it. She went inside, and fortunately, the concerns, the comments directed at the students seem to have stopped, but we're still getting... We're still having students coming out saying, well, they told me I can't vote. We have a copy of their card, but then they're not in the rolls. So that,
Yeah, that obviously there's a lack of cooperation there. After Election Day today, obviously the polls close at 8. Connor, do you know immediately whether there'll be follow-up on this? Does the president's office or university officials, will you be doing some follow-up on this in the coming days?
Follow up in terms of what?
Well, in terms of the, why there isn't a uniformity here of, say, students who registered not showing up on the voter on the rolls there.
Well, we can only do so much. Of course, I'll be able to provide any evidence I can of the copy of the registrations, but as I understand it, an attorney from the Secretary of the State's office was on his way down or is already at the school or at the registrar to address the issue. And I imagine that he or she will be the one to, you know, do the following up in terms of why these students are not on the rolls.
Okay. Connor Hardgraves, assistant to the president of Sacred Heart University. Connor, thanks for calling back. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, folks. There you go. The lawyers are on the way. Hold on. Let me do the... Here come yon lawyers. Come the lawyer brigade. Oh, man. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Connor Hardgraves. Thank you, Connor. He's listed as an assistant to the president of Sacred Heart University. So two separate issues here, folks. The snide comments that, you know, and it appears that Sandy Ayala went in there and told them. She may have said, stop being wise. Who knows what she said? Stop the wisecracks. But again, the schools complained here. They say, and again, Connor used the possibility of voter suppression. There's a wonder as to why these students who had registered are not on the voter rolls. I tell you, it never fails. It's why I love politics, man. I'm telling you. It's better than sports. It's better than doing shows about sports or anything else. Okay, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Voter suppression. Are the votes of Sacred Heart students trying to be, is suppression a strong term? Who knows? Okay, traffic and weather together on the sixes. We'll come back with more of your calls. And we'll revisit this again next hour. And also, we will talk about impeachment. That's coming up and more right here on WICC 600. It's Connecticut Today for a Tuesday.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And we are into the 5 o'clock hour. How are you? 5:07, almost 5:08. We'll have another check of traffic and weather together coming up in less than 10 minutes on the sixes here at WICC 600 on your radio and online at WICC600.com. It is Connecticut Today for an Election Day Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. If you got out and voted already today, good for you. If you're on the way to vote, good for you. If you haven't voted yet, don't forget to do that if you possibly can. Polls are open around the state until 8. We'll have all the winners and commentary tomorrow morning. Mayor Joe Ganim set to join Tony Melissa tomorrow morning between 5 and 10 right here on WICC 600. Check in as we do once a day or so on all the impeachment news coming out of D.C. And to help us sort all that out, a buddy of ours on the show, constitutional law professor Bill Dunlap, Quinnipiac University, joins us here from the law school. Bill, how are you?
Just fine, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Bill. Great to have you back. Boy, a lot of stuff coming fast and furious yesterday and today, Bill, and it all really centers on what was said in the secret hearings, changed testimony here, what's been released today. What have you seen so far that piques your interest?
Well, the Gordon Sondland changing his testimony as to whether or not there had been a quid pro quo and whether or not he had been involved in that could turn out to be a fairly significant development, although the White House is denying that there's anything to it and saying that Sondland himself said, I don't really know what happened. I don't really know whether an offer was actually made.
And that's interesting, Bill, because just that, you know, it's funny, you know, to one side, Bill, this stuff can be, you know, as people say, bombshell, like our network newscaster said here. And then, like you say, to another side, it's nothing. And then there's the whole legal thing here where in testimony, Bill, just one sentence in a statement or in a line of questioning here can really edge in that, you know, slight doubt that the White House would want.
That's exactly right. This is going to drag on, and I am sure that the White House will just continue trying to diminish the significance of this, although on its face, it looks like a very serious development.
You know, it certainly does, but then, you know, on some of the newscasts we had here at ICC, and I'm sure you've heard around the reaction here today, Bill, it's the kind of thing where, you know, they went to Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell. And we understand the line he has to toe there, but, you know, Mitch McConnell's reaction, Bill, was essentially, yeah, okay, so what? This isn't that big of a deal.
But this is not the only development, though. There's been a great deal of testimony from a growing number of people. We haven't heard most of the testimony yet. Most of it was given, as you just mentioned, behind closed doors. But those transcripts are about to come out. And then a lot of the people who testified behind closed doors are going to be testifying in public once this new phase of the process begins. So I suspect we'll be hearing a whole lot more than we know now.
Bill, is there anything that you have heard so far that edges into or borders or proves criminality here? Because that's obviously one line I think the White House is going to use. Yeah, maybe we were a little gritty on this one, but nobody broke any laws. Anything that you've seen, Bill, that might contradict that?
Well, I'm not sure that it's actually relevant. When President Nixon was brought up before the House Judiciary Committee and they recommended impeachment procedures to the House, two of the charges against him did not involve crimes. He was charged with abuse of power, and he was charged with contempt of Congress. The third charge, obstruction of justice, might very well have amounted to a crime, but it does not have to be a crime in order to constitute an impeachable offense.
Yeah, it just has to be something that to the House and then to the Senate, if they convict, correct, just is unbecoming of the office of executing the powers of the office, correct?
Yeah, I think unbecoming is probably a pretty low standard.
Yeah.
But it certainly requires something along the line of abuse of power, using the authority that he has as president to do things that he's simply not allowed to do. President Nixon was charged with using the Internal Revenue Service to harass his political opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there's a lot of obstruction of justice that was charged both in that case with the Watergate break-in and in this case as well.
And Bill, I did notice over the weekend, I don't know whether you saw Nancy Pelosi and some other Democrats just, you know, agreeing with what you said there, that they also may make a late move in this once they have introduced everything that may look a little sleazy versus Ukraine. They may also try to piggyback obstruction on this. That would probably be, I guess, their safety valve on this, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a big tactical or even strategic decision that they need to make, whether it's better just to get one charge, one bill of impeachment, really, really strong in on a very serious question of whether or not he was, in fact, trying to sell American goods, American defensive weapons in exchange for this damaging information on the Bidens, or whether it would be better to show the American people what the Democrats, what the House committee thinks is the vast array of offenses that the president has committed. And I can see that going either way, just having one really strong, very serious charge, or just pointing out the whole array of misbehavior.
And again, Bill, I think we've talked about this before in closing here. Obviously, this really, in the end, Bill, is all going to come down to Nancy Pelosi, is it not? I mean, she is the most powerful person now, at least in this thing, because she's got to make a tactical decision in 2 or 3 months heading into an election year, a decision that a lot of people are going to say could, you know, drive the schism even wider in the political divide here, motivate the president's base. And she's got to decide, Bill, correct, whether or not to just leave it as it is and say, listen, this is some bad stuff, but there's an election coming up, or she may choose to drop the hammer all the way and hold an impeachment vote.
Well, I think it may very well be out of her hands. I understand exactly what you're saying, and it might be that she has the power to decide how the committees and the members of her caucus are going to vote. But in fact, it may have gotten beyond that now.
Yeah.
There are several House committees involved in this investigation. The votes are going to be made by the committees, not by her. And whether even if she decided we've gone a little too far and told the committees hold back, I'm not entirely sure that they would.
And obviously then, yeah, they might not, Bill, but again, you and I both know They watch polls. They say they don't, right? You know, they watch the polls. They watch the talking heads. They see how the numbers are moving, and it may just come down to that.
Oh, it very well could. I mean, that's what almost everybody I've talked to thinks is going on in the Senate. The senators are looking at the polls in their states and deciding, am I going to be better off if I support impeachment or if I support President Trump? And I'm sure that the members of the House on both sides are looking at this to see how their own districts are swaying.
Which is good, Bill, because I think at the core of that means the American people may actually have a say in this, you know?
That's quite right. It's very indirect, but that's the way politics often works.
Bill Dunlap, a constitutional law professor, among other areas of study at the Quinnipiac University Law School. Bill, as always, thank you. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, there you go, folks. It's again, it's all probably going to come down to what the polling says, right? If I support the president here, I'm safe. If I vote against him, I'm safe. If I vote against him, I'll get reelected. If I support him, I won't get reelected. Listen, this is, you know, the number one, what do they say, the number one impulse of any politician is to get reelected.